Blog Talk Radio.
To be the man, you gotta beat the man. You wanna find out how good you are? You're looking at the man's shit. Let's go hook him up!
Did he give you some good drugs at least?
No, I didn't even get the gas, dude.
Oh, dude, that sucks. Anyway,
yeah, I hear
you. We got other calls on the line. Trey, what's going on? Sure.
Hello, Contreras.
Well, he's on here. Contreras. He's just not talking.
But anyway, hey, what's the fridge to get a beer or something?
Yeah, we could do the show without him. He sucks anyway.
Is that right?
He's almost as bad as that other guy's been bad. But anyway, you said you're having some work done at the dentist. What did they do? Did you just get a simple ass cleaning or did you get some work done?
No, I got the cleaning, but I originally went in. I'm a very bad dental patient. I haven't been to the dentist in like 10 years. No lie. Anyway, long story short, I went after we first got married. My wife and I first got married, actually 10 years after we got married, and I didn't have a cavity one. And so fast forward another 10 years, and I go in and, it all started Monday. I was flossing. This is a riveting story, by the way. I was flossing, and a chunk of my tooth went sailing out of my mouth as I was flossing my molars in the back, and I was like, huh. So I went to the dentist, they found a cavity, and now I have to have a root canal probably next week.
That's funny.
Yeah, I got one cavity in 10 years. That's pretty funny. It was a bad one, though.
You know, I have never had a cavity in my life, and I don't go every 10 years. I go maybe once or maybe every other year.
But, right.
Yeah, luckily I have good teeth.
Yeah, me too, until this one. So, yeah, what are you going to do? So,
Contreras is a hick, so he only has about maybe five. So, you know,
yes.
He's the only one of the group.
He goes to the dentist for his tooth.
Yeah.
Right. That's nice of you to say. There he is.
Fair, this is the only way to get you to join in on the conversation. What's going on, bro?
Nothing. I had to drop off my pizza cane.
Mmm. Awesome. Or maybe not.
Cool.
It's a good show on the road, so I can go eat.
Yeah. What are we going to talk about first?
I can think of a great, crappy topic. So.
Start off with the topic?
Or do you want to do news? I don't know. What are we doing here?
Well, we're doing a topic that I was ribbed about because it probably wouldn't be any good, I heard. And then we have a 2-page thread already about how people writing in about how what a good idea this was and
it's,
people posting their own.
You just gave geeks an opportunity to talk about wrestling. That's all you did. It's not like they're all going to do the show. At least they better. What the hell is that? You're getting your meth labs being rated, Couture?
Is Rick Steiner coming in your room? What is happening?
I downloaded the new sound effect app. Good one with us.
So, are we doing news?
You want to do news? Let's do news. Start off with news tonight. There is a pay-per-view this weekend. It is the Elimination Chamber. I have been to one of these. They are very fun to go to. This one looks somewhat promising. I'll start off with the bad stuff first. John Cena versus Kane in an ambulance match.
Okay, what are you talking about? How can this be bad stuff when they had like the greatest segment in the history of fucking Raw on Monday night?
Oh my gosh.
If anything, this whole thing is perversely entertaining.
Now, it is perversely entertaining. You've been all over Zack Ryder. You don't understand Zack Ryder. You don't get Zack Ryder. Zack Ryder is the greatest person who ever lived after Monday night.
When he gets killed every week. I've never seen anyone
with such great facials in my entire life. I mean, the man is a god.
Look, if I got to hear somebody else piss and moan that they're portraying him as like this loser, I'm going to vomit.
Right. He is kind of being
portrayed himself as a geek and a loser in his fucking show on the YouTube. Well, how the fuck else do you think they're going to treat you?
Just don't listen to Brian.
Like Zack Ryder has a lot of upward mobility. Fuck off.
He's going to be the biggest star ever, dude, after fucking Monday night.
Dude, he can't even keep a girl. He's a loser.
Dude, he was awesome.
I thought I was a jackass when he flew off that stage. That was awesome.
That was pretty awesome.
I was like, oh, fuck, dude. He's got a bad back and neck and all that shit. Now his knees are going to be fucking shot.
The other two are a work, Ed. Just saying.
Did you see what he was wearing, dude?
He reminds me of Colin Delaney.
I think Vinny described him best as Mr. Bill.
Yeah.
The next thing is him getting run over by a steamroller, for crying out loud.
Yeah. And Mr. Bill's girlfriend did leave him a few times for the real
person. That's right. Another thing worth mentioning in the bad category, the WWE's Divas Championship, Beth Phoenix versus Tamina Snuka.
How is this future five-star match even possibly going to be bad?
I probably won't be in the bathroom.
You guys are just mad because not only are there two hot women in the ring, it's two hot women that could beat the living crap out of both of y'all.
Moving on, world champion.
I've never been beat up by a woman without having to pay for it, so I don't agree.
Hmm. Got a little insight into what Couture likes. World champion Daniel Bryan defends against, God help us, the great Khali, Wade Barrett, The Big Show, WWE Intercontinental Champion Cody Rhodes, and substituting for Mark Henry, who is substituting for... Randy Orton, thank you. Santino Marella.
This is a better shot for you guys for Brian to keep the title. So everybody should be happy. All the Brian marks out there.
I'll agree with that. I hope he does keep the title. And in our main event, WWE Champion CM Punk defends against Chris Jericho, Dolph Ziggler, Kofi Kingston, The Miz, and R-Truth. Both of these are going to be held in an Elimination Chamber match.
It should be a good match. They're usually always pretty good.
Yeah, this one will be better than the other one, but yeah, it'll be decent.
What makes you think it'll be better than the other one?
Because the other one has Santino and Kali. That's why.
And that's why it will be better than the Raw one.
Have you been smoking again, Ed?
Yes, but I'm in my right mind. You can't tell me that. Now you
yes,
got
but.
Daniel Bryan, you got the Big Show, you got Barrett,
right.
You got Cody. They're all badass, and now you got some comedy in there. It's going to blow the Raw one away.
Wade Barrett
think,
is okay
at best. Kind of match you should have comedy in.
Thank you. It's violent. It's supposed to be violent, and people are supposed to die, and people
PPP
are going to be
TV
smashing
show.
And steel.
It's a TV show. There's no blood. There's no more raping women
you
or
can,
any of that
you
stuff
You can do a serious
on.
Match without blood. I've heard of them doing serious matches without blood before.
I've seen this show, this Elimination Chamber pay-per-view live, and there was no blood, and the year I went, it was awesome.
It would be awesome this year.
And it was the year that Edge snuck in the cage and won, which was pretty awesome. But anyway, so Elimination Chamber pay-per-view is this Sunday. Check your local listings for dates and times. Anyway, no, it's going
to
be a good show.
Stuff should be picking up, like, for going into Mania, so I'm looking forward to the next few weeks.
Definitely. Yeah, the next couple months are going to be hot.
All right, this past Monday.
Something that wasn't very hot was Jesse Sorensen was injured. Jesse Sorensen was wrestling Zema Ion in the opener of the TNA Against All Odds pay-per-view. Early in the match, Ion came off the middle rope with a moonsault to the floor. His right knee caught Sorensen in the top of the head and appeared to knock him out and jam his neck. He was rushed to the hospital, unable to move, and was in intensive care. After having a battery of tests done, it was determined he had a fractured C1 vertebrae, which connects the head to the spine, and a swollen spinal cord. By the next day, he was able to move his arms and had feeling in his legs. He was having some control issues with his legs by press time, but he is doing better. There is talk that he will eventually make a full recovery, but it's going to be a long, long process. Kurt Angle, who visited him in the hospital on the 14th, said Sorensen was told it would be 1 year before he could return to the ring, but Angle predicted Sorensen would make it back in 4 months because Angle is a knucklehead.
Do not listen to Kurt Angle.
Exactly.
You know, I watched some of the pay-per-view. I didn't see a lot of it because mainly because my illegal stream was cutting in and out. But I missed the actual move. But
it was pretty brutal. I watched it.
Right? All I know is that Zion Ion or whatever his name is. Could a person look more like a douchebag than him?
He's got the D-bag look down, but there's a lot of guys in TNA that have the D-bag persona.
He really does look like he has it. But, yeah, that's
he's
really
he should look like that.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying he's doing a good job, but he looks like a fucking douchebag.
He did a good job in that match, after that injury. No, he's still playing the heel and stuff like that. So, didn't make it look like a total pile of shit. So,
WrestleMania 29 will be held in New Jersey at the MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey, the home of the Jets and the Super Bowl champion New York Giants.
I don't want to go to New Jersey.
I don't either, but I'm going because it's the day before my birthday. So, it'll be cool.
At least I know I got somewhere to crash out. So, Mexican seafood, just so you know, we're hanging out for about 3 or 4 days and we're going to smoke a bunch of pot and you're going to drive me around that goddamn city.
I'm going to go to the shore and hang out with Snooki and Pauly D. And
like I said, I'm going to be hanging out with Mexican seafood. There's an Italian douchebag right there.
You guys ever been up there? Like New Jersey,
never.
New York? Never?
Never
Mexican
have.
Fun, though.
Nah, I've I'm sure it'd be cool to go to New York, but the thing is, we really don't have a lot of time for sightseeing between all the shows we're going to go to. So,
And
it looks
I
like
go.
you'd be going over into New Jersey and New York, because I think they're spreading all the access stuff and all the things stuff out.
It says the traditional WrestleMania week activities include WrestleMania Access and the 2013 WWE Hall of Fame ceremony, and Monday Night Raw will take place across the New York, New Jersey area in the days leading up to the show. Yeah, I've always wanted to go to New York, but my plan
you might get to meet your favorite drunk caller, Bluefist, on the trip.
I was really hoping to catch a Pearl Jam show in Madison Square Garden, but that's another story for another time.
Take a jacket.
Yeah, I'll do that.
Is it really that cold up in April at that time?
No, it's probably fine. In other WWE news,
Hold on. I'm sorry. Why? Okay, everyone was assuming that the next WrestleMania, the one after, which is 30, if I'm not mistaken, was going to be at Madison Square Garden. Which to me, even though it's 30, I think is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, yes, it's the nice idea wanting to keep it in the building. But you can't have, you've had 70,000 people the last I don't know how many years. You can't go to a 16-seat arena, if that, and have it there. So
you're losing a lot of money.
I don't see how they could do New Jersey and New York back to back. So does that mean maybe WrestleMania 30 is in Dallas?
I think it was said like the NCAA stuff is going to be the next couple of years in Dallas.
The next couple of years, okay, that sucks. I thought it was maybe because sometimes, when you're part of these tournament things, you don't have a tournament every year. Sometimes you'll have a regional this year, and then, it comes back a few years. That's what I was kind of hoping for, but if they have it multiple years, then yeah, they're fucked.
See, you laugh at me because I hate real sports, and see real sports fucking shit up. WrestleMania, you're in Dallas.
It's college sports, and it's all a work.
I'm assuming they'll do WrestleMania 30 in Toronto or possibly California.
I don't want to go to Toronto. How many Canadian members of the board have you met? Man, they're not the kind of people you want to associate with.
I know a lot of Canadian guys,
over the border. It's great trying to get over the border.
Well, if we're going over the border, Brian's not going, so it doesn't matter anyway, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, don't be telling people that the fists are weapons of mass destruction.
No, they were just weapons, my fists. Anyway, in other WWE news, WWE is releasing the Best of the Clash of the Champions on DVD. WWE will be releasing the Best of the Clash of the Champions DVD on 5/22. With Dusty Rhodes, who booked the first show and some of the later shows as a co-host. The Clash of the Champions were quarterly TBS specials, starting with Ric Flair versus Sting and Greensboro in 1988 and continuing through 1997. The first show did a 5.8 rating, and the main event peaked at a whopping 7.8 quarter for the last 15 minutes of the show. The last 15 minutes of a 45-minute draw in the main event. A number of great matches on the Clash of the Champions, such as Flair versus Steamboat in a 2-out-of-3 falls match in New Orleans, Flair versus Terry Funk in an I Quit match from Troy, New York, Flair and Wyndham versus the Midnights, the 1992 NWA Tag Tournament, and so forth and so on. So anyway, looks to be cool.
Yeah, okay, I'm pretty sure somebody could hook us up with an exact copy of these matches way, way, way before that DVD gets released, and I'm expecting it to be delivered to my door within the next few days.
Quite a wait.
I'm not talking about KZ this time.
I know the long wait you're going to have there.
Why? Man, you suck.
I'm busy doing shit. I ain't got time for this shit.
Girls, come on now.
What's funny is he's too busy to send the burnt DVDs because he will be burning DVDs.
Yeah, I'll burn them for myself. I take priority over all you motherfuckers. Sorry.
But that
reminds me.
Seriously, hook us up with a fucking DVD. Goddamn.
Go to the fucking store and buy it yourself.
Thank you.
I don't want to. I want a free one because I'm cheap
By the way,
I like to fight. I like to try to be like Brian Miller.
Put your money towards something that's good for you, like pro wrestling DVD.
Katrina, send me your address again. You forgot to last week. Yeah, anyway.
You know, I would like a tape or two, Craig. Why can't I get on this mailing list?
I'm gonna send him to Couture and he's gonna deal him out. So there you go.
Couture just been offered to me.
Okay, let's get this straight back.
Send people free DVDs. I've never been offered any compensation or anything. Just fuck you, Couture. Send me the DVDs.
When WrestleMania is in Dallas, I will bring you some awesome weed.
And like a nice person like Rodney, who offered to pay me for them. We kicked him days ago.
Rodney can't pay because Rodney's an unemployed bum.
Okay, move on.
Okay, Vince.
Okay, selected an appointment after today.
Good for him. Work the system, brother. Okay, in the last news story we have here this evening, Vince takes the Funkasaurus off of TV. Brodus Clay, let me finish reading the story. Brodus Clay's new Funkasaurus gimmick has been put on hold. WWE head Vince McMahon reportedly believes Clay's in-ring work needs to improve. I'll say. Clay, in a match against Heath Slater, was cut from SmackDown earlier this month, and Clay has not appeared on WWE TV since the January 30th edition of Raw. Clay wrestled dark matches at last week's set of TV tapings. That's because they put him in a ridiculous gimmick, and he's not the big badass anymore. He's a dancing Funkasaurus.
They're pissed off because they got mad at him because he tweeted, even though, you know, they talked about tweeting all fucking show long.
He did that tweet a long time ago.
Yeah, he did. He did it a long time ago. But they got mad. They kept saying he was going to be on, and they kept pushing it off and pushing it off. And I'm sure they're flying his ass in to do it after losing nothing. And then they decide, okay, we're just going to, you know, he's fat. He's not in good shape. You know, he doesn't look like he's on steroids, even though he shouldn't be on steroids. So let's make him look like the biggest fucking idiot in the world. And they proceed to do so, and it proceeds to get over. So, of course, now they have to take it off TV because you can't have somebody be over on the WWE TV. It's just not supposed to be that way.
I hate wrestling sometimes. The dude would like wrestle for, 2 minutes, and he'd do, like, 3 moves. Okay.
There was nothing wrong with it, but, yeah. Okay, so that is the news. By the way, we should probably address last week's little snafu with our show not being on.
Yeah, great, Craig.
I will take one-third of the responsibility.
You had a good excuse, though.
Yeah, thank you. Here's what happened. I called my wife and asked her to buy Star Wars tickets. Star Wars 3D came out last Friday. She went and bought the tickets, not realizing that, yes, in fact, I have a radio show to do on Friday nights. Because, God knows, Friday nights is the best time to do a radio show. But I digress. Anyway, she picked up the tickets and forgot I had a radio show. So she came home. Hey, we got these tickets. Or she called me. We got these tickets. They're for 6:15. Oops. So I texted Ed. Ed, I'm really sorry. This is the stupidest reason to miss a show ever. I can't be on the show because I'm going to watch Star Wars in 3D with my 5-year-old son because he loves Star Wars.
I never said anything in response to my opinion on how you missed.
I didn't say you did.
I'm just naming you so it's not happening.
Well, so anyway, I went ahead and let Ed know and left it at that. Now, what I didn't know is Ed was going to go, oh, shucks, Craig's not going to be on the show. I'll go have a drink. And then another.
I was actually in the process of already having a few drinks.
And another. And another. And then the last thing I see on Facebook is, I don't remember anything that happened last night. The last thing I remember was a hot black stripper on my lap. Blah, blah, blah. So, Ed, can you please fill in the blanks?
Okay. Well, first off, I had asked Couture if he could kind of set up the show, but unfortunately he was working, he couldn't do it, so it kind of fell on me. And I kind of decided I needed to have a couple drinks, and I had a friend encouraging me to meet him and have a few drinks. So I went, had a few drinks, thinking to myself, okay, I'm pretty sure I can set up the show on my phone. Shouldn't be a problem. Then I had then we were drinking out of these 100-ounce tubes of beer, and then started having shots and stuff. So then I was thinking to myself, this is going to be kind of hard. I wonder if I can do it. And a few seconds later, I got a text from Craig, and I said, well, you know what? I can just blame this on Craig, so there's no show tonight.
I see.
So I proceeded to get drunk, and then we were at this place called, and I'm probably not even going to say it right, even though I'm Mexican, Ojos Locos, which is the Mexican version of Hooters. And my first time I'd ever been there, and I would definitely be going back because there were some hot little Latina girls wearing some lingerie, pretty much that's all they were wearing, and it was damn fine. Unfortunately, one of the girls that was in our party got fucking too drunk and got cut off, so we ended up having to leave, and that's when we apparently we went to the strip club.
And that's when you made your move? Nice.
That was a good one.
I made my move.
Thank you, Katrir.
Well,
by the way, this totally.
I can continue on that because we're at the strip club, and I had just met this girl who had just got cut off, actually. And so we go to the strip club, and we're there hanging out, and there's the little table, the big round table where they dance, and you give them $1, and they dance for you for a couple seconds. So, I don't have a lot of money, so I don't really have too much for lap dances. So I'm like, okay, I'll just bide my time doing this. So I'm getting a dance, and this girl wedges herself between me and the stripper and basically takes over my lap dance and then starts asking me for dollars. So I'm handing her dollars because I am very much enjoying the show. Now, I am not being all up on this chick, but I haven't moved. And then this chick does this about 4 or 5 other times. So we're all there getting drunk, having a good time. And all I know is she's fucking drunk out of her mind. She ends up, like, walking towards the exit. And then all of a sudden, there's a guy following behind her, and this guy glances at me. He doesn't stop walking, and he tells me, he just looks at me in this real sad face and says, why you got to be all up on my wife? And turns his head and continues following his drunk wife out of the bar. And I was just there like, I had never seen this dude because this dude was not with us. He was not at the other place. He wasn't there. He disappeared, and I was like, I told her friend, I was like, some dude just fucking told me I was up on his wife. And she's like, oh, yeah, that's Monica's husband. We call him to come pick her up or whatever. So I may have caused problems in the marriage, but, like I said, I was innocent bystander. She forced herself between me and a stripper. I'm not gonna step back. I'm sorry. I can't do it.
Oh, you filthy man. Wow. That's quite a story.
Hey, Ed, we got a caller. Why don't you take it?
Oh, okay. Let me get back on the studio here. Okay, caller calling from area code 843. Who's this?
Hello?
Hello?
Hello? Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. How are you? Who's this?
This is Jamie in South Carolina.
What's up, Jamie? How you doing?
Not much, man. I just saw the topic, saw it was a fairly interesting one, thought I'd call in and get some thoughts.
Oh, you thought this was a good topic?
The best matches we ever saw live. It caused me to sit down and do some thinking when I saw the topic earlier today.
Awesome. Shoot it to us.
All right, well, first of all, I think you got the differentiation for me is between matches that were just beyond incredible because they were work rate matches or matches that meant something to you. I was fortunate enough to be at WrestleMania 28, Flair Michaels, the retirement match. It's been shat upon ever since, but, at the time it was a giant deal. Also, in ultimate nerdiness, I drove from South Carolina to Pennsylvania when Mitsuharu Misawa was working for Ring of Honor for those 2 dates in Pennsylvania and New York in 2007. My all-time favorite wrestler drove from South Carolina to Pennsylvania just to see him perform, and it was, especially with his death now, something I'll never give up for anything. It was just absolutely phenomenal. I'll never forget it as long as I live.
Wow, that's pretty cool, man.
Yeah, it was absolutely phenomenal. I don't, no regrets on it. But That being said, also, you know, at WrestleMania 28, it went to both ROH shows that weekend. And
yep.
the Dragon Gate six-man on the second night may have been
that
the most
awesome.
Phenomenal, just wall-to-wall. I mean, I like that match better than the one in 2006 that got all the love and the praise and five stars in the Observer. I thought the OA match was even better. Absolutely blew me away. Also, was fortunate enough to see Brian Danielson versus Kenta, not the New York match, but the second time they wrestled in Chicago at the Ring of Honor Driven taping. Enough just blew my mind away how incredible both of those matches were.
So going to the Dragon Gate match, because I was there and did see that match. That was an awesome, awesome match. It's just unfortunately that most of the other shows fucking sucked. And it also sucked that the setup of the arena sucked to where if you spent $100 to sit second row, you had lots of view and couldn't see the whole ring. And
he's talking about
Thomas. No, he's talking about the one in Arizona, aren't you?
No.
No, I'm talking about the one in Orlando.
Oh,
yeah,
okay.
It was
well,
an
ROH.
It was an
ROH
show.
Ring
yeah,
of Honor kind of
has
those issues. We shelled out, when we went to see Misawa, we shelled out good money for floor seats, but if you're any further back than the fourth row, you might as well get general admission. It really wasn't worth it. But, I mean, you know,
yeah. Well,
for something like that, it wasn't where you were sitting. It was being in the building.
That's because ROH knows how to throw a show and Dragon Gate doesn't.
Well, the Dragon Gate guys were on the ROH show those
two nights. Yeah, I know.
That's
what I'm saying. That's why that's why it was awesome, because it was on ROH and not Dragon Gate.
I actually went to the first ROH show the first night, and then I went to the Hall of Fame with Flair, and I heard that the second night ROH show that weekend just blew away the first one. So
absolutely phenomenal. It's lauded by many as if not the best Ring of Honor show ever. It was certainly probably the zenith of Gabe Sapolsky's run later in 2008, right before, because he got let go relatively soon after that, a few months later.
Yep.
And when they came back to Orlando that next year, they had maybe a quarter, if they were lucky, of the attendance they had for the Mania shows. It was sad.
Yeah. Ed and I have gone, to the last 4 years Mania weekend, and those shows are amazing. The Dragon Gate show in Arizona, not as good as the ROH show, but I totally hear you on the Dragon Gate stuff in ROH. It just, it was good stuff that weekend.
Oh, they were absolutely fun. There were a number of great matches. There was a Steam and Generico match against, I don't remember off the top of my head who it was, that was also phenomenal, but it was overshadowed by I think that match ended up being like second or third on my Observer voting that year. It was absolutely phenomenal. It was a treat to have been able to have been there live.
I think that's the one that had all the controversy where they probably should have, that tag match, they should have gone to the finish probably 2 minutes before.
That was the exact one.
Yeah, I know exactly. I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
yep.
That was, awesome shows that weekend.
Yeah, those were those were just incredible shows. I'm hoping to make it down to Miami this year. The across
we'll
the countries
there.
I can't do, but Florida's not too far from South Carolina, so I'm trying.
Hey, I'm flying in from Seattle, so if I see you there,
Yeah,
give you a ride
to Seattle.
Greg will give you a ride to all the shows.
Bite your tongue.
All right, done.
Hey, thanks for the call, man.
Thanks a lot. Take care, you guys.
All right. Bye.
All right, take it easy.
Quick update. I'm on Abdullah the Butcher's Facebook page, and 5 minutes ago he posted, or excuse me, at 1 p.m. he posted, I'm having dinner with Mae Young tonight.
I needed that picture in my head.
And I was about to say the same damn thing. I could just see her rubbing his scars.
It says, dinner with the great Mae Young tonight. Smile, smiley face.
Put them
awesome.
In the Legends house.
Dude, I got to text the cast, and maybe you can get us fixed.
Goodness.
But anyway, I guess go ahead, Craig. You can intro the topic since it was your topic.
Yes, this was my topic, and as our caller and many of the guys on the board said, what a great topic I came up with. Of course,
what kind of idiot would think it's a bad topic?
Yeah, Ed did. Yeah, well, Ed dumped all over my topic.
I'm thinking to myself, we're going to talk about the three best matches we've seen live. And,
right.
I've been to three shows with Craig, which probably has a good percentage that three of these matches are going to be there. So I'm thinking, two of us are going to be talking about the same exact match.
Well, I figured you would say something like that. So I, on purpose, mind you, made sure that none of my three would have been the obvious ones that you would pick. So these aren't the very best matches I've ever seen live, but they're way up there. And our caller actually hit on the first one. I also picked Ric Flair versus Shawn Michaels, WrestleMania 24. This was April 4th of 2008 at the Citrus Bowl in Orlando, Florida. By the way, the Citrus Bowl is a pit.
An orange pit?
Yes, one of the worst stadiums I've ever been in my life. But they did it up nice for Mania 24. Shawn pinned the great Ric Flair in his retirement match at 20 minutes and 23 seconds. As our caller alluded to, not a classic match. It was a great match.
A little bit too much for me. I don't think it's that bad, as some people say.
Yeah, it wasn't an all-time classic, but it was a good slash great match. The emotion
Wade
surrounding it was
5 stars.
Well, that's Wade Keller. I probably would have gone 3.5, 4. But yeah, it was a good match, but the emotion surrounding the match and Shawn Michaels, just his storytelling and his facial expressions and everything else, just a phenomenal match. And having been there the night before to see Flair inducted into the Hall of Fame, one of the greatest, I'm sorry to say it, but one of the greatest moments of my life. I mean, it was awesome to be there. Listen to the man talk for like 1 hour 15. I don't know how much made it on the DVD, but he talked for a long time, and it was awesome.
That's the reason they have time limits now.
Well, I'm glad I got to see that Hall of Fame speech, because that was amazing.
Well,
so yeah, that's
one
of my favorites. Then.
You can see another one.
Now, hold on.
Yeah, maybe.
You mentioned that you probably give this match 4 stars, and then you're raving about how awesome it is, and you have it on your list.
Yeah, because I know you were
going to. I hate this argument that only 5-star matches are matches that supposedly have fucking 100% perfect work rate, because there's
a lot
more to a match than just work rate, because you have to
factor
in the emotion, and this whole thing. Even though Ric Flair is an old man and he can work nowhere near as good as he could and he couldn't do some of the things he wanted to do, the emotion and everything in this match makes this match, the whole thing, 5 stars.
Okay. Well, work rate-wise, it was around 3.5, 3.75, 4 stars. I want you to remember that, what you just said, because one of my next picks I know you're going to dump on. So
get ready.
Look at the John Cena CM Punk match, you got 5 stars, and there was some bodies in that match. So,
yeah, that's a perfect example. I mean, Yeah, I mean, because there's a lot of, and an example of even worse than Craig is our good friend Supersonic. As far as like work rate like that, I mean, there's more to a match than just work rate. You know, unfortunately, some people just can't see that, and they will be annoying as hell arguing the fact about it, but you know, you got to factor in the I love you spot, the whole thing after the match. The after the match is still part of the match, you know.
Yep.
And it really gets on my nerves, these people who are just so, you know, all about work rate and how it, you know, this and that is great, and then you know, they'll shit on Hulk Hogan. You know, I'm sorry, but Hulk Hogan is one of the greatest workers of all time. He might not have the greatest work rate, but he's the best worker of all time.
I still love that Hogan-Andre the Giant match. That's like one of my favorite matches.
There was nothing wrong with that match.
It was not good, but, you know, it was a perfect place and had a great crowd and a great story to it. So that was a great match to me, except for the phantom headbutt into the ring post.
That was horrible.
Yeah, that was bad.
What are your thoughts on the match, Couture?
On which match? Oh, Flair and Sean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I mean, I don't like rate wrestling matches. I don't use, like, star ratings. I don't get that into it, and plus I like to date girls, so I don't get into doing that.
All right.
But, yes, it was a great match, and there was some – that's why when Sean just, like, gutted himself on the table doing that off the moonsault.
That was horrible.
God, it looked like he was dead. And then he did another moonsault, and Flair just totally missed him.
Yeah.
And killed
himself. Talk about –
And that, I mean, some of the things were bad, like the classic, you know, like bridge up spot into the back slide. They couldn't do that. He couldn't do the Flair flop, the Flair bump into the turnbuckles. So, I don't know. But it was still a very good match. I enjoyed it.
Agreed. Ed, why don't you go next?
Okay, well, I'll go ahead and go with a match that we get to see the rematch at this year, and that would be the Undertaker Triple H match. And the reason I like this match, and the reason this match is like, here I am arguing about work rate, but this, you know, of course, the work rate wasn't as good as the first Shawn Undertaker. You know, they're a little older, they're more beat up. And they had to do, as people would say, smoke and mirrors, but they did everything awesome.
Mm-hmm.
What you know, I just talked about, like, the whole package of everything, the emotion. And I don't remember. It's been, like, since I was a little kid where I had so much emotion and I was so emotionally involved in a match that, because in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, if there's one person who has enough power to take it, you know, to end the streak, to call, you know, be able to pull like a move off like that, it would be Triple H. So I'm basically, and everyone knows I'm not the biggest Triple H fan. So I'm basically watching this match with my face in my hand. I mean, I'm not blocking my view, don't get me wrong, but my face is in my hand the whole fucking time. And I was literally scared that he might actually win. And I just, it was just so intense and just the drama. And then he hits this freaking tombstone on the Undertaker. And to me, that was like, that's it. He did it. He did it. He's ending the streak. That son of a bitch. And then the ref counts 1, 2, and I'm just like on the edge of my damn seat. And when he kicks out of that freaking tombstone, I went absolutely fucking insane, screaming and yelling and pumping my fists. Aeroscorp from the board just turned around and looked at me like with these eyes all open, like, what the fuck is wrong with you? Because it was like, in a way it was like there was some real emotion in there, because it's like I didn't want it to happen. I was terrified it was about to happen. It didn't happen. I mean, I haven't reacted to that match until other matches that I will talk about later.
Well, you know, when it comes to that, you know, as much pull as, like, Triple H has, this is the Undertaker we're talking about. I mean, he's not some, you know, Johnny no-name. If he don't want to lose at WrestleMania, he ain't losing at WrestleMania. I don't care what anybody does. That's just my opinion, you know, Triple H or anybody else. If he don't want to lose, he ain't gonna lose. So that's why I figured that. I mean, people always say that in past, you know, well, Triple H just book himself to win. I said, as a fucking Undertaker, he's been there since 1990. You know, he's a different person, different guy than everybody else. So, and even when I knew who was gonna win, I was still on the edge of my seat during those near falls. It was awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. The match was tremendous, and it was. It was right up there with the last 2 years at Mania with Shawn and Taker, and that one, I didn't know if it was going to hold up as well, and it actually did. And Yeah, it was just a tremendous match. I know exactly what you're talking about. When he hit the tombstone and folded Taker's arms over him, I thought for sure it was over. And I saw grown men, besides Ed, you know, jumping up and down and just losing their minds in that stadium. And that match was phenomenal.
Yeah,
why does that make you so much hate, it seems like?
Hey, because Triple H is involved, and I'm one of the biggest Triple H haters in the world, but I can still look past that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can understand that. For those guys, I mean, it was like a spot fest. It was kind of like spot after spot after spot, but it was just...
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was in a great... It had a lot of good drama to it. It had a great crowd. It factors into it. I mean, it wasn't like a... It wasn't like a couple of cruiserweights in front of like 900 people at the Impact Zone just hitting spot after spot after spot and nobody gives a shit.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
I'm looking forward to the match this year. I think it's one of the best builds they've had. I mean, one of the best like logical builds they've had for a match in years, it seems like. You know, with Triple H saying he doesn't want to wrestle him and how Undertaker wants has something to prove to be the last man standing, like because he got carried out last year. I think that's a great story.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, I love the build for it. I mean, that was actually a very ingenious explanation of why Triple H doesn't want to fucking fight The Undertaker.
Yeah.
Agreed.
I just thought Undertaker gets so frustrated he wouldn't take the match, he just had to do something, so he started cutting his hair. Like something like a girl would do.
Yeah, I'm waiting
like
to see how that really works into
it. And he did it with a straight razor, which is even cooler.
Well, he was cutting a wig, but yeah.
Would anybody have known that was a wig if they didn't know the dude was bald?
No. I don't think so.
I didn't see the wig just didn't look ridiculous to me, except I knew that the guy was bald. I mean, if I didn't know that, then I wouldn't have even noticed his hair. So.
Right. You're up, Couture.
Okay, I can go back to probably my favorite match of all time, and one I was there live for, was April the 2nd in New Orleans. I was there for the Clash of the Champions and Ricky Steamboat and against Ric Flair, 2 out of 3 falls match.
Is this the one that's the main feature on the Ric Flair DVD?
It's on the first one.
He brings his kid to the ring.
Yeah, I think he did that in all three of those matches, though.
Okay, I'm just trying to pinpoint exactly which one you're talking about.
The
rest of
the one
awesome.
Was
when
he came
this
in.
This is the one where it's I think I have there. This is the one where it was this the one with Meltzer, or was that a different one? No, that was Chicago, right?
Yeah, that was Dave Meltzer's hair. Was in Chicago.
Yeah, okay. Okay, I know which one you're talking about now, though.
Yeah, this was, God, these guys work so good. Probably the best chemistry of anybody I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
These two guys right here work the best together. And 2 out of 3 falls match, I love 2 out of 3 falls matches. And it was kind of, some people, like fans today, will maybe watch it and think it's boring just because it's like, it's actual
it's
wrestling.
A long match.
Like,
you know, it's a long match. Just, you know, rest holds involved. It's not a high spot going 24/7.
Yeah, I mean, Steamboat, he did this one. It was just a simple thing. He was working on Flair's leg, and he dropped, like, I think it was like 10 elbows right in a row, just right on his leg. And Flair, when he's selling, like back in, like, the Crockett days, sometimes I think Flair would get really hurt because, like, he'd topple out of the ring and says, oh, God, oh, shit, oh, my leg,
well,
shit like that.
Well, when he punched at the guy, like, when the guy would hit something and he'd fucking, like, cut at the guy.
Yeah, he said, oh, you son of a,
yeah.
Something like that. It was awesome. And Flair, and he kept working over Flair's leg, and then eventually it was, I think it went to figure 4, and, no, Flair went to the figure 4, and then Steamboat rolled him up, but then Flair reversed it into the inside cradle and took the first fall. And then the second fall, he's working on his back the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the first time, I think maybe it was the first time I've ever seen a main eventer, like at that time period, actually submit in a match. And it was Ric Flair, of all people. I don't think you ever saw big stars like that submit in matches at that point. He did that to the double chicken wing. And so he's working over Flair's back in the third fall. They go back, and it gets to, you know, back in those Crockett days or the NWA days when they would, 10 minutes remaining in the match, 10 minutes.
Right.
5 minutes remaining in the match. And when they kept on doing that, you kind of get it telling you, oh, I'm going to go to time limit. And,
right.
But they swerved me. And they did a follow of 56 minutes, so that stuff was awesome. Because I'm sitting here saying, okay, let's just run the clock out. It's going to be a draw. We'll do a rematch somewhere where I'm not going to be. So, but no, they did a follow in the 56 minutes in the third fall. Steamboat won. Excellent match. Awesome match.
That like, you know, I think we were talking about, like, a couple weeks ago where we mentioned, like, blindfold matches. And that is blindfold matches are, if you put a blindfold on Ricky Steamboat and Ric Flair at that time, you get a four-star match. You get a four-star match.
Uh-huh.
Ric Flair's one of those guys, I could go in the ring and I could probably, you know, tell everything he's going to do and have him do some match if I wanted to. Just because, you know, he has like, the formulaic matches and stuff like that.
That's the thing. I don't, like, a lot of people say that. He does a lot of the same things. Okay, he's going to go up top and get cut off. He's going to do the corner thing. But his matches weren't always the same. I mean,
he
knew how to work through his opponent. And, you know, I mean, his matches weren't always the same. I would say Bret Hart's matches were more the same. You know, Bret had his moveset and
same
Bret
moves.
Awesome, great. But I would say he's more formulaic than Ric Flair. Ric Flair, he couldn't work with the guys to the other guys' style. You know what I mean? So I disagree with the formulaic.
That's kind of a lame complaint anyway, because just about everybody does stuff like that.
You're totally right. Everybody has a comeback that they do. I mean, Shawn Michaels, you know, he'll throw a forearm and he'll hit the kip up, and then, you know, sweet chin music. You know, everybody's got their stuff. That's everybody does. Even Rob Van Dam, when he's, you know, geeked out of his brain on weed, will hit the moves that he knows how to do.
Now, one thing about this match that was really good right from the beginning is, like, the build-up to this match is, it's a little of both. There's Ric Flair doing some comedy, not being too serious, and then, of course, like, when he, you know, brings out all the women and he's in the tuxedo. And then you got Steamboat, and all his stuff was pretty, like, intense, like when he ripped off, like, the tuxedo and all that stuff. When they get into this match, even though there is some comedy and some, like, lightheartedness built into the what led to it, right off the bat, the match starts with Ricky Steamboat slapping the living shit out of Ric Flair.
Yeah.
And just making the tone of, you know, it just sets the tone right there that, you know what I mean, this is going to be one hell of a match.
I loved the way Steamboat would sell when he was, like, his leg was being worked on. It was like he was just dragging his leg around. He couldn't put any weight on it. It was awesome. here's a funny story about how I ended up going to this show. Because my birthday always ends up around WrestleMania. And usually we go to my aunt's and get WrestleMania, but this year my mom took me to New Orleans. We had some family down there and to see the Clash of the Champions. So we went down there, and of course this was on a Sunday, so I didn't have school. I didn't have to go to school the next day. So we go back through on our way home. We stop at my aunt's house, Louisiana, and lo and behold, she takes WrestleMania 5 for me, so I got to watch that the next day. So, it's awesome.
You know, I've got to see a lot of amazing matches live. I've got to see Flair and Michaels. I've got to see Ricky Steamboat and Macho Man. But I am actually jealous that I never saw Flair and Steamboat live. So, yeah, props to you.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, well, I also got to see the Road Warriors get beat when they got the fast count by Teddy Long.
Jerks.
And I saw Randy Ross, he repelled from the ceiling with an American flag.
Randy Ross, I always thought he was pretty cool.
Okay, my next one, and Ed's going to give me some crap about this, but I am picking It was April 3rd, 2009, Houston, Texas, for the GHC Junior Heavyweight title, Davey Richards versus Kenta.
This one where they forgot the spots?
Oh, yeah. They botched the finish not once, but twice. And
did you hear
that,
everybody? They didn't just botch the finish. They botched it twice. Not once.
Twice. But this match was phenomenal. And Ed and I were sitting ringside, front row. You can see our ugly mugs on the DVD. It's on Supercard of Honor 4.
You can see it. That's
where
Ed
got
a shout out
in the commentary.
Yes, Brian did make some of the commentary on this this particular one. These guys kicked each other really hard. They punched each other really hard. They chopped each other really hard.
What
at one
did
point,
they do off the apron? Did they do like a falcon's arrow off the fucking
falcon
ring?
Falcon arrow. Kenta hit a falcon arrow on Davey Richards from the ring apron to the floor. Feet in front of us by, you know, like 3 feet in front of us. It was a sickening thud. Worst spot I've ever seen live. I mean, worst car crash spot I've ever seen live. This was the very first time I've ever seen Kenta wrestle. Awesome. Supercard of Honor 4. Kenta hit the GTS. The first time he had him in like a torture rack spot, and he was going to hit the GTS like to the back of Richard's head. I don't know what happened, but they ended up botching it twice. And so on the tape, I went and found a, I think it's on dailymotion.com. I found the whole match, but they edited it in such a way where he catches him in the torture rack position and then hits a regular GTS, and that was the finish. Just an awesome match. At one point, the fans were chanting F WrestleMania. Of course, they were using the whole word, but Craig doesn't curse, because this was 2 days before the WrestleMania in Houston.
They were also chanting, we want cake.
Yes, that was the other thing on this show. Some kid brought a cake. I don't know why. The ring broke at one point, and as they were out, you know, fixing the ring, this young man stands up on his chair and goes, don't worry, I brought cake. And he pulled a cake out of a bag and stuck a bunch of forks in it and started to pass it around. It was the most insane and awesome thing I've ever seen in my life. Everybody had some cake. The ref had some cake. Bobby Cruz, the ring announcer,
Terry
had some cake. Terry had some cake. It was such a great atmosphere. And this match wasn't even the main event of the show. This match was phenomenal.
Did he get yelled at for bringing in outside food?
I don't think he did, but it was. He brought cake. I was amused.
Trust me, him bringing a cake was a lot better than other shit he could have brought in because of the gun show underneath that.
Yeah, this was a wacky building. There was 3 levels. We went to the very top level, and there was a gun show on the other level. Thank God. This weekend was weird. I also got to meet one Larry Sweeney that weekend, and he was not in, he was not in the best of minds.
Let me tell you about the Larry Sweeney meeting, because...
Yeah.
We're basically all outside the Hall of Fame, outside the whatever the arena is in Houston. And everyone's dressed nice for the most part. You know, there's a few people who are wearing the wrestling shirts, but for the most part, everyone's dressed up. You know, even I was styling. And
sure.
We're just standing there, and just Brian's on the phone, and he gets off, and he's like, he just says, Sweeney's coming. Keep an eye out. So... I'm in shit at this point. I'm like, holy shit, Larry Sweeney. This would be cool. Cause this is right when Larry Sweeney got pretty much fired pretty much from ROH. So anyway, so I'm looking around, and I see all these beautiful people dressed all nice, and then I see this degenerate walking, this bum. And I'm thinking to myself, and this guy, he's got like these really funny-looking cowboy boots with his baggy pants
tucked into
him. He's got this electric green, bright-ass green windbreaker wrapped around his waist. he's wearing one of those puffy vests like Mork and Mindy, Mork hat from Mork and Mindy, and he also has the hell else he had? Yeah, you know, just all kinds of just wacky outfits. I'm thinking, yeah,
he had an old Clash t-shirt on.
this is a guy who just left the Goodwill with his wardrobe.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, it hits me, wait a minute. I'm like, Brian, dude, is that fucking Sweeney? And Brian's like, yes, it is.
Yes.
So we got to meet Larry Sweeney, and he was there. And then we talked to him for a while. And he was even lucid enough to remember doing the show. And,
right.
So anyway, we later went to the bar, which Craig didn't go because Craig is a wimp like that. He doesn't go to bars. And so we hung out, and that's where, you know, I smoked out with Aries and Daphne and hung out with Danielson and Nigel and Claudio and all the dudes. And, of course, Larry Sweeney comes in, and he came like, I walked in from behind me, and he's like, dude, I didn't notice that earlier, but I have to. And he starts bowing down to me. He goes, I have to bow down to your mullet. So in a bar, I had Larry Sweeney bowing down to me. It was the most unreal thing I ever fucking seen.
Were you thinking he was doing like wrestling matches outside the arena?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is the year.
Well, not a funny story, but this is also what the incident that caused our good friend Supersonic to be like the most hated person on the board because.
Yeah.
He had an extra ticket, and Brian was asking for if anyone had an extra ticket at the Brazilian Steakhouse. Sonic said, yeah. Apparently, it was for Larry. Sonic met Larry, I guess, outside the Hall of Fame or whatever, but was kind of weirded out by him. So he decided not even to sit with Larry. He decided to sit with the Hollis.
Yep.
So Larry, you know, sat by himself. But, you know, this is at a time when Larry had just left, was a little, you know, wasn't taking his medication. Wasn't the most well off, so I told Sonic, he's like, he was making a thing, he's like, yeah, this guy, you know, I hope he pays me, he better pay me, whatever. I go, dude, you know, I wouldn't count on it, but hey, Brian asked you to do this, tell Brian that, you know, he's responsible, you know, before you give him the ticket and so, and I'm sure Brian's an asshole, but he's nice enough, he'll reimburse you for it or whatever.
Hey.
He never did that. He did?
No, he didn't.
Oh, he didn't. Yeah, of course he didn't. So, anyway, so unfortunately, when Larry died, unfortunately, we all know that incident. You know, Mr. Sensitive, all butthurt because he didn't get his $50 or $60 back, decided to
it was
an act of himself.
It was $100. I understand.
No.
You should have heard some of the it doesn't matter. The guy's gone. Okay? But,
yeah.
Yeah, I got to take about a 4-block walk with Mr. Sweeney and Brian, and Brian turns to me at one point and goes, "This is not the Larry Sweeney I wanted you to meet, Craig." And I was pretty sad, but yeah, getting back to the match, Ed, you were there. What did you? What do you think of this
match? It was an awesome match. These dudes were beating the living shit out of each other. I mean, when they did that spot where they were just standing there kicking each other in the face.
Yeah, double boots to the face.
Yeah, double boots. I mean, everything about this match was 5 stars. I mean, everything about this match. This match was freaking awesome. It was.
Yeah.
But... And there's nothing wrong with having a botch in a match. I mean, look what Liger did with the Great Sasuke in the Super J Cup. He made the match better because of a botched spot. But like I say, this wasn't one botched spot that they worked into the match, changed it up. No, this is, I botched a spot, I'm going to do it again. I botched a spot, I'm going to make it less simple, and I'm going to do it. And I cannot rate this a 5-star match, and I cannot say it's one of the best matches I've ever seen because just the simple fact of that, I mean... It was too much. And the crowd was the most politest crowd ever because they patiently sat there and didn't say a goddamn thing. They didn't chant, you fucked up. They just sat there and they waited. And then they had to wait again. And then they waited a third time. And then they went fucking crazy.
Yeah.
But I can't say it's the greatest match I've ever seen when there's such a big fuck up involved in the match.
Fair enough.
And I'm sure Couture has never seen the match.
I'm sure he has.
Oh, I only watch relevant wrestling.
I got a DVD of it, and I sent it to you, but, you know, you're kind of jackass about stuff like that, so you're not getting it.
Yeah, anyway, moving on. Go ahead, Ed. Pick the next one.
All right, next one is, I guess I'll go ahead and do this one already. I kind of debated if I could even add this one to the list, because in a way, I was there, and in a way, I wasn't there.
I see.
Okay. But the emotion where I was at, to me, must felt just like it must have felt in the original building where this was taking place. So I am going to count this. And that would be the first ever world-class Parade of Champions, Harry Von Erich versus Ric Flair. I remember begging my dad for months and months and months to take me to fucking Dallas so I could, well, not months, but weeks, to see this card. I remember giving him a hell of a time every damn day. And then when they announced that they were going to do it at Closed Circuit at the Freeman, where that's what they always have the shows, I really laid it in. I remember crying my eyes out, begging to go to the show. My dad didn't want to take me because he went to a Boston show that was flat on Closed Circuit and it sucked or whatever. So he was against it. But I was a pain in the ass, little crybaby brat, and I cried and begged until I got my damn way. So my dad takes me to the show. And they had the screen in the middle, and then they had, like, the crowd. It was, like, half the building. And even though it wasn't live, it wasn't, like, full. You know, I've been to WrestleManias. I've been to fuller buildings, you know. I've never felt so much emotion from a crowd. And the match, I've seen a dozen Terry Von Erich versus Flair matches that were better, you know. Probably five or six even live. And it's not the greatest work rate match in the world. But what this match is, this is the most perfect ending to a wrestling match in the history of pro wrestling. It was the greatest feel-good moment in a way that there ever was. The ending of that match, from everything until the family, you know, brothers running in celebrating, to Ric Flair talking about how he's going to be back, to all the other wrestlers in there, to just the fans just going. It was the biggest crowd up to that point for like a few years, maybe in quite a few years. It was the most intense thing, and I wasn't freaking there, but everybody in freaking Joe and Henry Freeman Coliseum had tears in their eyes. My dad, who was always cynical and giving me a hard time and would always be like, don't cry when Ric Flair doesn't lose, because why is he going to lose it in San Antonio? And then he told me the same thing on the way to the arena, don't cry when Ric Flair wins, and so on, so on, so. And even my dad had tears coming down his face from the ending of this match. It was the most, it was, for 1 second, I mean, some people might even say this about the WrestleMania with Eddie Guerrero and Chris Benoit at the end of the match. For 1 second, this was, everything was right about wrestling. For one moment, this was the, you know, it was the perfect moment. I mean, you can't dispute that, and it's very hard for anyone to even say anything to me that would even come close to the emotion. And to, it was just the right thing at the right time, at the right place. It was incredible.
I gave it a star and a half.
I've only seen clips of this match, and what I saw was awesome. I think I would go a little bit higher than a star and a half, Couture. But, yeah, like I said, only seeing clips, and, yeah, you're right, massive amounts of emotion. And
I'll give it 2 stars because Kerry still had 2 feet.
Anyway, yeah, this was a ton of emotion. They showed a shot of the crowd, and yes, there were women and children and even grown men crying. And I should go out of my way to look for a bootleg copy of the whole match.
I could actually send you one. I got the whole card.
Oh, there you go. Just send it to Katrina. He'll get it to me.
I'm sure he'll send you one. We'll send one to you.
Sure.
I watched the entire show on YouTube a couple of weeks ago.
The whole show is all off.
I'll check it out.
It's not the greatest. It is that for a super show. It was not super show caliber matches, but you know it was the whole event. You know the whole thing. So anyway, what were your thoughts on the match, Richard?
I thought it was a really good match. I think this was. It was on that Lord of the Rings PWI thing. Yeah, because I remember they talked about the David Von Erich dying. I think this is the first time I actually saw Kerry Von Erich. Match, it was relatively short, but, I mean, it didn't need to be, like, some kind of long, drawn-out match. You just had to go out there and do what they had to do, you know, to put Kerry over and get that moment. And, yeah, it was great.
And Mark Norris did an awesome job calling the match.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll never forget hearing him when, you know, a dream come true for the Von Erich family. I mean, you know, everything about that was perfect. I mean, even Dave Meltzer was in the audience with tears in his eyes.
Oh. Okay, Katrina, you're up.
Okay, go back to April of 1986. This is the first Crockett Cup in Superdome in New Orleans again. And the Sheepherders against the Fantastics went to a double disqualification, like one of the bloodiest, best matches I've ever seen in my life. They had been.
What show was this on? I'm sorry.
Thank you for liking my wall post.
Yes, I just did. Thank you, Matt Cleary. You are the man.
what are you saying?
No, what show was this on?
This was the first Crockett Cup in 1986. That's okay. Road Warriors point.
Yeah. Okay. My bad. Go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of the best tag team feuds. I mean, this was the feud that I saw the first barbed wire cage match.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked more like a barbed wire fence that was about to fall down at any moment. this thing was raggedy.
It was.
So like
those, Bill Weiss built it in his backyard or something like that.
Was it like those old Ohio Valley cage matches that they used to have? Remember that thing? It was the Ohio
like
Valley
Smoky Mountain
cage
Wrestling
matches.
Or something?
Yeah, sorry, Smoky Mountain Wrestling cage matches with the wooden structure with the chain link in between.
Yeah. Like Jimmy Snuka tried to dive off of that thing. But yeah, this is they've been feuding for a while in UWF and they met in like the second round of the tournament, and this is funny reading years later because this is a double disqualification. Dave Meltzer gave 5 stars in the Observer.
Wow,
and it was an awesome match. I mean, there was so much heat and the blood and the crowd was just incredible.
Well, you're basically talking about two of the most underrated tag teams of all time. You know, everyone talks about the Rock and Roll Express. Well, I've said it before, I'll say it again. I think the Fantastics were better than the Rock and Roll Express.
Yeah,
they were awesome. Tommy Rogers was a hell of a worker. I mean, Ricky Morin is the best of the four. It's not even close. But as a team, Tommy Rogers was freaking awesome. Bobby Fulton was just right behind him, you know, and he had like a little more charisma. But I love the look, the sequence, tuxedo, you know, tie and every, you know, the jacket, sequence jackets, everything. I mean, just an awesome look. They're always being like, you know, considered cheaper versions of the Rock and Rolls, whatever.
And you would actually notice that Bobby Fulton was there, unlike Robert Gibson.
Yeah.
Sometimes you forget about him, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the Sheepherders, you know, everybody's going to remember the Bushwhackers. I mean, that's all anyone can remember is the Bushwhackers. But,
yeah.
You know, luckily I got to see the Sheepherders here in San Antonio and get to be the act. They were the top act in San Antonio. I knew what they could do. I mean, they're awesome. They were awesome workers, awesome brawlers. I mean, just. Everyone thinks them for the you know, licking each other's foreheads and doing the little Bushwhacker Dance or whatever, but these dudes were legit bad. They weren't that big, but these dudes were two of the scariest fuckers of that era.
Yeah,
I don't remember seeing this match, but thanks to the After Mags, I saw all of the pictures that accompanied those, barbed wire matches that these two teams have had back in the day, and that would have been really cool to have been there live to see that.
Yeah, a lot of people they'll shit on, like, when they became the Bushwhackers and stuff, but that probably extended their careers by about 10 years.
No doubt.
And made them more money than they ever made anywhere else.
Yeah. Yeah, very true. I mean, we had the Bushwhacker Luke on a few weeks ago, about a few months ago, and he would agree with that statement. Okay, my turn, and this was my last one. I totally switched this up on Ed. I told him my three picks, and I called an audible. No Mercy, 2008, the Rose Garden in Portland, Oregon. Myself and Brian Alvarez.
Don't tell me you're going to pick Buff Bagwell against Booker T.
No.
2008?
Yeah, didn't happen, buddy. Triple H versus Jeff Hardy, No Mercy, the Rose Garden, Portland, Oregon, October 5th, 2008. This match went 17 minutes, and it was awesome. Probably one of the best Triple H Jeff Hardy matches. There's not a lot of them, but this one was way up there. The main event of this show was Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho in a ladder match. That was a great match as well. This match, I'm pretty sure Brian gave this match 4.5, possibly 5 stars. This match was almost perfect. There was a point where Triple H did hit the his finisher, the pedigree on Jeff Hardy. Jeff kicked out. Jeff hit the Swanton. After that, everybody in the building thought Jeff Hardy was going to beat Triple H in the middle of the ring. Of course, it didn't happen. But
oh yeah, and he later hooked his. He did a weird cover where he kind of like laid his back on there and just like hooked his legs and Triple H
yeah.
Got the crucifix and got the pin.
Yeah, exactly. He draped him. He draped his leg over him. It looked like, he struck the pin hold like, obviously this is the finish. And the crowd bought it. Triple H hooked his arm and hooked his leg and rolled him over and got the 3 count. This match was awesome. And a really underrated pay-per-view, especially for 2008 standards.
I've been busy smoking some Joe out of my bong. What were you talking about?
Triple H, Jeff Hardy, No Mercy in 2008.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm sorry. I must have pulled Jeff Hardy there for a second.
Yeah. Well, we were talking about Jeff Hardy, which made you run to grab your bong. So what else can be said?
It was good. It wasn't as good
it
as
was
Taka
great.
Michinoku, man.
It was great. And I've seen Taka Michinoku live a couple times.
No, it was awesome. I mean, Jeff Hardy's another guy who a lot of people don't think he's that great. I mean, he's a guy who really, he has a big fan base because he is the only person with a fan base in TNA. He also has a lot of haters. And I can understand people hating Matt. I mean, I totally see that. But
yeah.
I've always thought Jeff got an unfair shake as far as that. And, there's a bunch of Jeff Hardy matches that I thought were awesome. You know, he had some awesome ones, that awesome one with Van Damme, he had awesome with Undertaker, multiple ones of Umaga.
CM Punk.
Yeah. I mean, Jeff Hardy's great. And then, as much as I hate Triple H, as much as I think he can be a douchebag behind the scenes and everything, I mean, he's an awesome worker. He knows what to do. Well, I can't. I you you can kind of argue that when you can bring up like the Steiner match, but then you can also argue that he knew exactly what the fuck he was doing. So, you know what I mean? He's that good, you know. He can have a great match, and he can also make someone look like absolutely shit if he wants to. But, I mean, great worker. It was a good match, but that's probably going to have to put it at the very last of all nine matches that we're going to talk about tonight.
Okay.
You got Jeff Hardy. I mean, I'm never the biggest Jeff Hardy fan. You know, I loved all that stuff. You know, when they did the big three-way feud with the Dudleys and Edge and Christian, I thought that was like one of the best tag team feuds that the company's ever had.
Yeah, totally. They don't believe in tag team wrestling anymore.
And when he went to singles, I mean, a lot of people were saying like he's the next Shawn Michaels. He wasn't that good.
No,
Shawn Michaels is like on a different plane from everybody else. Yeah,
totally.
I just hate Matt on general principle. Because he's a stupid shit. You know, like when you post like fake suicide notes and say that's not what you meant, I know what you meant, and you're just fucking with me and said, I got no more time for you when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Jeff's just a fuck up with a drug problem. I mean, I'm nothing I can get mad at him about. He's, you know, he's got a drug problem. That's not, I mean, I ain't going to hate him for it. But
yeah,
Ed
has a drug problem too.
Well, I do hate him, but then not why.
Well, yeah, that's different, though.
There's nothing wrong with that either.
On cue. Ed, my friend, you're up.
Okay.
Exhale.
Well,
there we go.
So now I have to decide between two matches that you choose in the audible because I thought we were going to talk about both of these matches. But, because it's actually a tough decision because you have one match that was probably, you know, the guys were a year younger and could do a little more. And then you have the drama of the ending of the second match. So,
let's talk about both of them.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about both of them. Let's talk about The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels matches at WrestleMania. And, anyone who had any doubts that these matches would be great would be an idiot because they had such an awesome feud before Shawn retired, which actually caused Shawn to actually take his break. You know, the Hell in the Cell, other matches, and then and then a couple years before the WrestleMania matches, you had the final face-off in the Royal Rumble, which is the greatest 10 minutes of any Royal Rumble ever, and kind of foreshadowed in the future to see these matches. And you basically had the matches and in the first one in Houston, which should have been the main event but didn't go on last. And you had Shawn making an incredible – well, both of them. I mean, the entrances were in Houston are awesome.
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome.
That's when he came down it looked like he was coming down from heaven or something and wearing a white hat or something like that.
Yeah. Taker rose from the grave. Shawn descended from the heavens.
That's awesome.
In white, And just an awesome match. They did the crazy spot where a lot of people, Brian says that this brought the match down to 4.5 because he thought The Undertaker had died. And,
almost count-out spot that I've ever seen. I've never seen people like so into it almost being a count-out.
Basically what happened is Shawn's outside, The Undertaker goes for his dive. You had it was either Deuce or Domino and was the cameraman, and Shawn just kind of grabbed them and pushed them into the path of The Undertaker.
Isn't that bad, so
it was ugly.
And then you had like the X sign, and you had other referees come running down, but you know ended up Undertaker being fine.
It looked like about a pile driver from about 10 feet in the air.
Yeah,
you know, the way he landed looked like he just pile drove himself right into the mat or the floor. I was expecting it to be good, but that kind of exceeded, you know, what I was thinking.
I was more of a fan of the first one than the second one because, I mean, the second one was really good, and then there was the very last spot of the second one, where, you know, Sean is, you know, basically daring Taker to hit him with the tombstone again, which he did. There was all that, but I just, there's something really, really special about the very first one. And
maybe the second one taking place so close to the first one, you know, it's kind of hard to live up to, you know, to exceed something like that when it's like just a year apart.
Well, yeah, the big difference is, and, you know, people might not take this seriously because they might say, well, that's not really that long of a time period. Unfortunately for these two, that year made a big difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
True.
That year made a big difference in The Undertaker, what he could do. It made a big difference in what Shawn could do. You know, let's remember that. I mean, Shawn was still having awesome matches to the very end, but by this point, Shawn was in TV matches was throwing 90% shot. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was cutting corners because he knew he couldn't. Their bodies just, it's like Dave when he talks about MMA fighters. Okay, well, one day Randy Couture is just going to get old. One day Anderson Silva is just going to get old. Unfortunately, between those WrestleManias, they got old.
Yeah. They aged 10 years between the 1 year between them.
Especially imagine this year. I mean, Taker's, he hasn't wrestled in a year.
Yeah. Whole year.
That whole year, that year's been good for him, you know, to rehab whatever injuries he's had. So.
Yep.
And a lot of people say in a match, imagine probably they're like, Triple H and Taker are older and it's going to be a shitty match. I don't think it's good. There's no way it's going to be a shitty match, I don't think.
No.
They're good enough veterans and pros to, they even if they got to go the smoke and mirrors route again, they can work something that's going to be great, I think.
Yep, you just got to know how to play the crowd, that's all. I mean, that's a big part of working. To me, that's more a part of working than actual work rate.
Yeah. I mean, you can go out there and, I mean, you can know how to do all the moves and put together a great match, but, you know, sometimes it's just how your characters and stuff come off and to the audience. Because really, that's what draws the audience in is the characters that you present, in my opinion, anyway.
Yeah, and I love the ending to the second one. I mean, it's just the dramatic kind of, I guess if you look back up a bunch of years later, you might think, oh, it's kind of corny. But no, at the time, I mean, it was dramatic. It was kind of like, it was the opposite of the Shawn Flair match. Where, you know, it was Flair saying, okay, finish me. It was this time it was Shawn accepting it and taking it. And I thought that was awesome. And then it was just an awesome feel. I mean, all the emotion after the match, after Shawn had lost, and he knew it was pretty much his career was over. I mean, just that kind of adds to my feelings of why this match is just as good as the first one, because even though the work rate wasn't as good as the first one, it had more emotion and more storyline, actually, and more meaning after the match than the first one.
Yeah, and the ending was much better than the first one. You know, Shawn pulls himself, the Taker wants him to stay down. Shawn pulls himself up and he just slaps the shit out of him. And Undertaker, you can just see in his eyes, says, I'm fixing to bury this fucker. So he picks him up and does the jumping tombstone, which I'd never seen him do before. I said, that's it.
Yeah. It was awesome.
So it's my turn, my last match, right?
Yeah.
Okay. You might laugh at this one, but it was in, I guess I think it was like the spring of 1989 when the NWA came to, they had an auditorium in Vicksburg, Mississippi with probably about 400 people in it. And I saw an awesome Bad Street match with Michael Hayes against Lex Luger. which was a Bad Street match. It was just like a street fight. And they fought all over the fucking building. And this was, at this point, Luger was actually a pretty decent worker. And Hayes was pretty good too. And they just fought all over the building. And I think, I think he hit him with took his boot off and hit Michael Hayes with it. But just like the crowd and everything, it was just, it was just really a fun match. And one of the best ones I've seen live.
Michael Hayes just fucking, like, if you want to compare him, like what his character, who he was as a wrestler, he's like the pro wrestling version of David Lee Roth. You know what I mean? He was like a rock star. You know, and it's just, God, I mean, it's like, I think back, you know, I watched some of those early, when he first came into World Class as the fan favorite, and I watched those matches, and I'm like, how the fuck did I even, or anyone even think, well, why were we cheering him? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He was, because he was doing all his, you know, his Freebird dance, and all his, like, shaking and all that, and wearing kind of pink, and everyone loved him, but thinking back, it's like, why? You know what I mean? But he was awesome. I mean, just like, he knew how to play the crowd, his awesome interviews. He had the greatest left hand in the history of pro wrestling. He didn't get enough credit for how awesome that was. I mean, every match he threw it, and it was just awesome when he fucking just decked the dude with it, you know.
And afterwards, snuck backstage and wanted the Great Muta's autograph, but instead he took my ticket stub and licked it because he had the mist still on his tongue. So that was like his autograph.
Oh, I'm getting an eye in from Craig here. Oh, no, I think Craig had dropped out there for a second.
Here's Craig.
Craig, what the hell
are
you doing, Craig?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I'm sorry about that. I hung up on you guys. I didn't mean to.
That's unprofessional, Craig.
Yeah, well, so is smoking weed during a podcast, but we won't even talk about that. Lex Luger and Michael Hayes as one of the best matches you've ever seen live.
Yes.
I will, I didn't see it. None of us have seen it. Your opinion, I believe you. I don't know why, but I agree. There's something about a extreme type match or a Falls Count Anywhere type match that it's always fun. I saw Crush, and if you remember the Sultan, have a match all around the Air Force Base, and the match was horrible, but I remember seeing that match and enjoying the heck out of it. Two big dudes brawling all over a building. So
I mean, the Luger Michael Hayes match, it was all in the crowd. You get to follow them around and shit like that, and it might just make for like a fun live experience.
Yeah, definitely.
Even though some might say it was only like a 2¾ stars match, I give it 5.
Yeah, who cares, man? That's your thing. That's nothing wrong with it. Hey, did you set the show for an hour and a half or 2 hours?
I set it for 2. I didn't know how long we were going.
Okay, cool.
I think Craig's trying to get a hint, trying to get away here.
I was seeing if you needed to throw out the plugs, but go ahead.
Okay. Well, I'll throw out the plugs already. I'll catch TV off guard. Everyone check out AngryMarks.com. You can always download and stream our show at AngryMarks.com along with a lot of other shows like the Angry Marks Show and a whole lot of other ones. So check out AngryMarks.com.
And this show you're listening to.
Yes. Yeah, and this show you're listening to right now.
Absolutely.
And, since we're talking about the matches we saw live, you guys maybe want to talk about our first ever live wrestling experience?
Yeah. I'm trying to remember mine.
Well, why don't you try to remember?
In 1986.
That was the first one?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was. I started watching in 85, and I think that was the first show I went to.
That's a hell of a first show to go to as your first ever live event.
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, they had like 24 teams and like some of the best teams, the Fantastics, Rock and Roll Express, Sheep Herders, Arn and Tully, the Fabulous One, Road Warriors, Midnight Express, Magnum TA, Ronnie Garvin,
and Baba.
Yeah, Tiger Mask and Baba. Bill Dundee and Buddy Landell.
What am I talking about?
I'm trying to think of
the
organs in there.
Didn't they have like Rick Steiner and
Bud Sawyer.
Bud Sawyer, yeah. Didn't they have Dr. Death and like Terry Taylor or somebody?
Dr. Death and Terry Taylor, they had the Koloss.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think who came out of Oregon for, I think it was maybe like Mike Miller and maybe Bobby Daggers or somebody came out of Portland or something.
Yeah, I think the only team that didn't show up, it was supposed to be Rick Martel and Dino Bravo, but they didn't make it for some reason.
Dino Bravo had his appendix burst or something. Rick Martel was there because he's on the tape when he has to forfeit the match. So I don't know if that's actually true or not, but Rick Martel was there. It was an 8-hour show.
Gosh.
They had a matinee afternoon session. They did like the first maybe couple of rounds, and then came back for the evening at like 7 o'clock, and they finished the rest of the tournament. So you didn't have to actually sit there for 8 hours. You got a break to go eat or whatever you wanted to do. And I also got to see Ric Flair against Dusty Rhodes with a Dusty finish.
Of course.
The first event I ever went to, it was a WWF house show. And the main event was a tag team battle royal. Basically, it was a battle royal with tag teams. And if your partner got eliminated, you had to step out as well. And Big John Studd was in this match. I can't even remember who his partner was. Andre the Giant. gosh, the Don Morocco was in there. I remember the Killer Bees. Junkyard Dog. I remember Lanny Poffo and Billy Jack Haynes were a team. It was in the Tacoma Dome, just down the freeway from where I'm at now. And I think this was probably, I'm going to say about 87, but don't quote me on that.
The hell was that?
Somebody's phone going off.
People keep posting on my fucking wall and keep beeping.
By the way, some of the guys on the board posted some of their favorite matches. Freeway posted, I saw Steve Austin wrestle Chris Benoit for 25 minutes in Calgary back in 2001. Markin wrote, best match I ever saw, Bulldog versus Hart at SummerSlam 1992. That match was amazing. Wiretap posted the 2010 Royal Rumble, Sandman, Angle, and HBK at WrestleMania 21. Zombie wrote a novel of matches.
Zombie's trying to sell DVDs. Don't even read the novel.
The last one he posted was Taka versus Christopher Daniels. Was one of his Project Humanoid, Cactus, and Sullivan.
I think
someone's
about to make a run-in on the show.
Cactus and Sullivan versus the Nasty Boys at Slamboree 94. That was really good, I remember.
I shouldn't have said that about people posting on my Facebook, because now everybody's posting on the damn team.
Yeah. Misawa versus Kenta at a ROH show. More from Zombie. Adam Summer wrote Joe Kobashi in 2004. Let me see here. Matt Cleary posted, also saw Bulldog and Hart in 92, and he also saw Shawn Michaels versus the Bulldog from that European pay-per-view. The Jeremy wrote, and I don't believe this, Harlem Heat versus the American Males. Don't know what to say about that. let me see here.
At least they had an awesome theme song.
Silva saw Flair Steamboat in the Superdome April 2nd of 1989, and also Michaels and Jannetty at the Manhattan Center at Monday Night Raw May 17th, 1993. Page number two. Joseph 16 saw the Terry Funk and Sabu Born to be Wired match live. Michael Sempervivi, our good friend, again, wrote a novel, most notably Sullivan and Benoit at the Bash of 96, Brett and Diesel in November of 95, Horsemen, Road Warriors, Dusty and Nikita in the Tower of Doom match, July 88 at the Cap Center. Also, Flair and Funk.
That's the lady in the man's bathroom. Look at that. That is a woman in the man's gym right here in Baltimore.
that was awesome.
Yeah, that was awesome. Another novel, Loki versus Jay Lethal. And that's about it. Looks like a lot of... Oh, Oscar wrote that he drove from South Carolina to see Misawa. Oh, he was our caller. Yeah, anyway. So, yeah, lots of people seeing lots of good wrestling. Ed, what was your first wrestling experience?
Well, actually, a little different from y'all because you guys got to see, like, major promotions having major shows. Or
right.
I don't know if yours was a major show, but it was a major promotion.
Yeah.
Whereas mine... would have been, I've been watching wrestling for years, had never gone to any. When my dad finally told me he was going to take me to wrestling, I assumed it was going to be Southwest because I had been watching at that point. I was watching Georgia, I was watching WWF, and I was watching Southwest, which was the San Antonio promotion. So, of course, I figured it's Southwest. So we go to the show, and it's not the biggest crowd. It wasn't really that big. The floor was full, but there wasn't too many, like the stands weren't like full or anything yet. And so we're there, and I'm watching the matches. And there's some cool matches. I remember this, like, the opening match was a black guy, like Bungaloo Blue or something. He did the stereotypical black guy wrestling gimmick where you put him in the headlock, and he gets his ball head out of the headlock, and... you slam him against the turnbuckle and it doesn't faze him because he's black and he has a hard head and stuff like that. And there was like a masked luchador dude. And then I remember seeing like Jose Lothario. And I remember like being into it, but like I said, I didn't know who any of these guys were at the time. And I remember, and then there was like it was a decent match of Al Madrill and oh God, I'm blanking on his name, on Bill Orton, Wild Bill Orton, which was also cool because I got to take part in my first ever wrestling chant, which was everybody was calling Wild Bill Orton Chauncey. So I joined in on the Chauncey chant, even though I didn't know what the hell Chauncey meant or whatever, but I was just chanting the shit out of it. And then they had a few other matches, and what I really remember about this show is also my dad. My dad used to joke around and always try to embarrass me or whatever. So I just remember, we're at the show having a good time. I'm still a kid, but I'm at wrestling with my dad. I'm feeling all, I'm grown or whatever. So I'm like bugging my dad to let me. I'm thirsty. I want to get a soda. So I'm asking my dad to let me go get a soda on my own, because I can do it, right? So I remember, my dad gives me some money, so I start walking down the aisle, and then towards the end, my dad yells at me, and he's all, mijo, tome un cerveza. So, okay. So I'm like, cool, I'm going to get my own soda, and I'm going to go get my dad a beer. So I go to the counter, and I'm all excited, and I'm there, and I'm like, what do you want, kid? I'm like, I want a Sprite and a Coors Light. And the dude is like, what? I want a Sprite and a Coors Light. And this dude just starts like laughing, and he calls the dude next to him, and they start laughing, and all the people behind me start laughing, and everyone's making fun of me. It's like the funniest thing they ever saw, and I don't know what the hell's going on. I don't know why they're not serving me a beer. I just know they're not serving me a beer, and that I'm letting my dad down, and everybody's laughing at me. So I sadly just grabbed my Sprite with just tears running down my eyes. Just all upset, just embarrassed, and I let my dad down. I didn't get him a beer and everything. And of course, I'm a little kid, so a short attention span. So I'm walking in tears with my Sprite, and I just I look up and I see a sign, and the sign said Carrie, and at the time I didn't know who Carrie was. It said Carrie beat Kabuki, but I knew who the fuck Kabuki was because I watched him on Georgia. So I just remember I went from crying my eyes out to just running at full speed, screaming and yelling and spilling my Sprite all over the place, screaming, Dad, Kabuki, Kabuki. And so then Kabuki came out with Gary Hart, and I got to take part in my second wrestling chant where I got to chant Egghead at Gary Hart. And then it's like, Nick Foley tells this Jimmy Snuka story, or people tell their story about, like, the thing in wrestling that, like, really caught them or whatever.
Right.
And I'll never forget that moment, because in that moment, I heard some freaking Tom Sawyer start blaring over the microphone, and I basically witnessed a demigod come out from behind the curtain and come in and see a guy who, in my opinion, still has the greatest wrestling physique of all time. He's not super jacked up like the Lex Luger guys or whatever. He just has these giant pecs, shoulders, arms, but he could move, he could drop kick. I mean, he was just long hair, had those you remember those roach clips you could win at the carnival with the feathers?
Oh, yeah.
He had those in his hair. And I was just like, that is who I want to fucking be right there. That is the greatest dude who ever lived. And I became the biggest Kerry Von Erich mark that day. And just, I was already a wrestling fan, but there was no turning back after that.
Well, here's a quick little story about your heroes of Von Erich. I went to a world-class show in Vicksburg. And you remember the tag team Beauty and the Beast?
Ring a bell to me.
It's the names that
ring a bell. It was Terrence Garvin, I think, is who it was. It looked kind of like Jimmy Garvin, but he was kind of doing like a gay gimmick. And he had this other guy.
Was he one of the guys from the WWE that got in trouble?
No, this is a totally different guy.
Okay.
Anyway, he had this like gay effeminate gimmick. And so they were having a tag match with Kerry and Kevin, and Kevin on the microphone says, "We know there's one thing people in Mississippi hate, and that's a bunch of fucking faggots." And you got everybody to chant, "Faggot, faggot, faggot."
Wow.
And they never did that here.
So I was out there chanting, "Faggot, faggot, faggot."
Well, it does come to pass that my hero is the most perfect person in the world, but then again, who is, you know? So.
I got to see a show. It was at a military base here. One of the very first shows Brian and I went to, you know, together, not, you know, like as a couple or anything, but, you know, we went to the show together, and
it
was...
You have done it as a couple, is what you're saying.
Yeah, whatever. It was Dan Henderson, and he was wrestling this guy named Christopher Daniels.
And, is this an MMA fighter?
No. This was he was in developmental down there in California for a while. Mikey Henderson, I'm sorry. And these two tore up this base. I had never seen, acai moonsaults and things like this. This was like one of the very first like indie shows that I'd ever went to. And that was just such a great match. And I talked a few weeks ago about seeing Tyson Kidd and Harry Smith wrestling. Also got to see Spring Stampede 99, one of the three times WCW was in our area. I got to see Juventud and Blitzkrieg. That was a great match. Also on that show was Mysterio and Kidman. And probably the best match on the show, Benoit and Malenko against Raven and Saturn.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was such a good show. That was actually from the Tacoma Dome. Good wrestling. Like I said, I take that back. WCW was in this part of the States four times total.
I would have liked to go into like an ECW arena show. Just once.
I would have loved to have done some of that.
Yeah,
that would have been awesome.
Cool.
Okay.
Well, cool. So we got 11 minutes here. So do we have any final things we want to talk about?
No, let's
go. Everybody, go to the Over the Top Radio on my Blog Talk page. What's the address? BlogTalkRadio.com/Contrere. Me and Sinbad did a pro wrestling flashback show on Sunday night, talking the Rhodes family. So you can go back there and listen to that. And we're planning on doing. I'm not sure when we're gonna do another show. I think it'll probably be next week. We can't do it Sunday because of the pay per view, but we're gonna we're taking the 1991 Battle Bowl pay-per-view. We're taking that roster and we're going to do a shoot Battle Bowl and actually draw names from hats and see what teams we come up with.
Okay, interesting.
Okay, well, look forward to it. It'll probably happen in about 6 months.
It's fine, Ed.
Anyway, so Craig, I know Craig was trying to end the show, but I know you got something else you want to talk about, Craig. Anything?
And what's Star Wars?
You know what? Highly overrated.
Like the movie or the 3D experience?
The 3D experience. You know, it wasn't filmed in 3D, so therefore, and that first movie, you know, not A New Hope, but, you know, Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
I'm gonna blow you away by this next statement. Not the best movie ever made.
I enjoyed it. A lot of people have been in, you might not be a George or a fan.
It's the weakest of the six, but
yeah.
I mean, and it's not the greatest movie, but I actually enjoyed it. I mean,
sure.
You know, it let the groundwork for the next two movies.
Sure, and I'm fine. I actually enjoyed the Clone Wars movie, but this one, the middle, there was a middle section. It drug really hard, and I had trouble staying awake. To be honest with you, my boy loved it. Of course, he's five and doesn't know anything about plot and bad acting. So,
did they get rid of that horrible-looking Yoda puppet and put some CGI Yoda or something in there?
Oh, I wish. You know what? The CGI Yoda is far worse than the puppet Yoda. They should have brought back the puppet Yoda. I disagree.
No, I mean puppet Yoda from the first movie from the Phantom Menace is what I'm talking about. That thing was horrible.
Mm. Yeah, that's still there.
Now I gotta go back and watch it.
Yeah, there's something about CGI Yoda. It's just not as cool as the puppet Yoda. I mean, it's horrible to say, but
when he was actually doing like fights with lightsabers, only
exactly.
In a couple of his movies.
In a way, you're right. Just if you're looking at it just like being on the screen, the puppet one was better. But I marked out when he pulled out the lightsaber and started jumping around.
I marked out more when he was through fighting and he turned his lightsaber off and then grabbed his cane and started wadding his and started using his cane again like he was crippled.
Yeah, it's I mean the novelty of it's really cool and cool they went back and redid it in 3D, but it wasn't filmed in 3D, so it's kinda hokey, but you know, Lucas and Spielberg are going to get every dollar they can off this, off the six movies. And, you know, I'm a sucker, and I'm going to pay for it every time. So, I'll go see
everybody will yell at George Lucas about it.
But, yeah, I'll go. Like, I'll go see the next one, even though I almost fell asleep on the first one. But, yeah. Anyway.
Have you guys ever seen the movie Fanboys?
Fanboys?
I
know about it.
And they're trying to go see Star Wars or something.
They're trying to. They're it's like these guys who are high school kids or you know childhood friendships, and they kind of they're going to have one last hurrah because one guy gets cancer, and their plot is they're going to their plan when they were kids was that they were going to cross country, go to Skywalker Ranch, and steal the plans for the first movie. That's what they decide to do. It's got like Seth Rogen. It's got like William Shatner. And a few other people, and it's fucking, it is a hilarious movie. I mean, it is actually very, very, very funny, but a lot of people don't know about it. But it's I recommend that if you're a Star Wars fan, you'll get a good laugh out of it.
If you want to see
Netflix?
I don't know if it's on Netflix.
I'll check it out.
If you want to see just a film full of geeks, you should watch Trekkies.
Mm.
Have you ever seen that? It's a Star Trek documentary about the Star Trek fans.
I'm not a fan.
There's a woman that works like at this. She works in this office, and she makes everybody call her the commander.
Okay.
Hey, you didn't like the new version?
Oh yeah. That Star Trek was fine. I like the new one, but the older films I just didn't get into.
Except for Wrath of Khan was awesome.
On Fanboy, you'll like Fanboy because they go to when the guys are crashing, the guy that's driving takes a detour to the little town where Captain Kirk was born. And they have like a statue of Captain Kirk, and there's a tour being given, and it's Seth Rogen all wearing like on his sticked out in his nerdy Star Trek outfit. It's awesome.
I wanted to see that first Star Trek movie in the theaters. Like, when did that come out? Like, maybe like late 70s or something?
That was the most boring piece of shit. Fucking movie ever.
All right. Star Trek 2 Wrath of Khan was like one of the best movies ever, I thought.
Yeah, I mean, there was a big difference.
But the newest one, the new
it had that hot-ass ball chick, but goddamn, that movie just went on and on and on, and God, it was horrible.
Hey, do we have anybody on hold right now? Do we have anybody on hold right now, by chance?
No, that is not what I see. Why?
Oh, okay. That Semp just posted beeping in, son.
Yeah, I saw that, but I don't know if he was just trying to get a beep to come out on the show in the background.
Oh, I got
those complaining about it.
Oh, okay, my bad. Sorry, I didn't mean to derail the show.
No, we went off the road long.
That's very true. I got pizza waiting for me. Can we end the show? I got me a
let's end the show.
I got me a fiery Hawaiian pizza with ham and pineapple and jalapenos and hot sauce. Got my name on it.
Wow, that sounds like a heartburn city.
Yeah. I'm printing out observers on my computer, so I need something to read, so I've got something that's going to make me go to the bathroom later.
I got you.
Oh, man. But anyway, well, we'll be back next week. I guess we'll figure out a topic, and let's see if we can get a guest with it.
I'm working on Big Vito and also one Adam Baum right now.
Why do you got to say names? They never do the show out there, you name drop them. But,
I
doubt anybody's going to
totally
be disappointed if we don't get Big Vito on the show. So,
hey, how dare you?
Not letting nobody down.
We can talk about his skirt.
Yeah. Anyway, everybody come back next week. We should be on a normal time like always. So everybody come back next week, and we will see everybody then.
To be the man, you got to beat the man. To find out how good you are, you're looking at the American shit. Let's go hook him up! Tonight.